When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Welcome to Goalie Science, the podcast that bridges the gap between goal setting, science, and peak performance. I'm your host, Jamie Phillips, a former professional goalie, currently pursuing a doctorate in physical therapy and specializing in goalie performance coaching. Joining me as always is Dr. Ben Cernik, a seasoned goalie coach and sports analytics specialist. Whether you find yourself at home, on the road, or at the rink, grab a cup of your favorite beverage and let's drop the puck on this week's episode.
Jamie, I'm going to completely blindside you here. I have a bone to pick with you, and I don't even think you realize this.
Is this on goalie physio?
No, I don't care about that. I like to make fun of you for that, but I don't actually care about it.
I think you're better than everyone because you were a chiro, and you're like, oh, I'm out of this, so I'm therefore superior.
I'm not better than anyone. In fact, I spent a lot of time and money to not do something. And if anyone can learn from my lesson there,
that's me.
Anyways, not the point. No, the bone I have to pick, I almost commented on one of your social media posts unprompted. Like, it was one that I know all you post on social media, the clickbait guy, the glaringly engagement man himself. Your one post, you're talking about screens and you're talking about how you're okay giving up positioning if you need to see the puck.
Yeah.
I want to talk about that.
Yeah, 100%. Because it depends on your degree of positioning.
That's what I'm looking for. That's what I'm here. That's what I came for.
Yeah. I'm not saying that you should be, say in the video. I actually, if you watch the whole video without seeing red.
No, I don't know. Seconds of it. No, I watched 12 seconds.
You only watch 12 seconds of the minute clip. Yeah. I say making sure that you're not taking a massive step, just a half inch or a couple centimeters here and there, so that you are slightly off angle as long as you see the release. I would rather that, because then you can project into the other side and make that save, versus hoping you get hit and dropping and being blind. And because I get that question a ton, and that is my honest answer, and that's my opinion. It's not, I don't think there's a way to say it's right or wrong, but I would rather someone see the release than not see it at all.
Yeah, you know what? And like, again, this is an unsurprising turn of events, but of course I agree with that.
Crazy. I never would have thought.
Yeah, I know. Maybe I'm not that original. It's just, I find myself seeing that lots of goalies default to being off their angle on the screen.
It's funny that you say that. No, I see the exact opposite.
Just like you,
I went and watched one of my goalies play the other day, and he gave up a screen goal and just didn't look far enough.
Yeah.
I actually see, for me, what I see is more goalies, they come out, they get set, and they go, check, oh, I can't see it, I guess I can't see it, and all of a sudden they shoot, and then they go.
We'll watch.
And see the puck. Instead of, like, I would rather someone battle to the very end, even if they're coming off their angle by you know, a couple inches in order to see it and just have that fight. And that, so that's why I had that conversation with the younger goalie, because he wanted to know. He's like, well, what if I can't see it? I was like, how hard are you fighting to see it?
Yeah, I think I have a really, and this is maybe a hot take, and so cool me down if necessary. I don't think there's ever really a situation where a single layer screen should force your position.
With a single layer screen, probably not.
Like, I think you're right. So again, it does happen. Sometimes you end up with just a really big person in front of you. So let me put my hand up here, right? Like there's been periods of times when like teams have put like 6'5", 230-pound players in front of the net. I don't care how big you are. That's just a thick person in front of you. You're going to have a hard time seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, in junior hockey and minor hockey, we don't see that near as much. Even college hockey, you don't see that many bigger guys. Even like, again, it's just not that common except for like at the NHL level. Again, like, a single layer screen, you're right. People just like, they look once and they don't really see it. And they're like, well, I'm screened now. So it's over. Game over.
Yeah. I don't say very rarely. I find that most of the time, guys and girls will give up when it's a multi-layer screen or there's a defenseman trying to block their box out. I usually, for the most part, I don't have that issue with a single layer screen. It's pretty obvious to look on one side or the other. Or especially at a younger level, players just aren't that good at being screens. So, and they don't want to get hit with the puck, so they're off to one side.
Hmm.
Which is also, again, if you're ever a player listening, if you understand being on angle, you will be a very good net front spreader.
The best screen ever.
Yeah. Exactly. So that was my case. So if it was a single screen like I used in the demonstration, because unfortunately I think I do have, two milk? There are definitely two milk crates and screen and pads that I could have used. But then
it's tough. Look,
hey, I have a 10-year-old, 11-year-old.
Yeah. Look, hey, like I said, I came here with the smallest bone to pick and a couple of lukewarm takes on screens.
Yeah, maybe if you watch the whole clip. Nope,
I refuse to. I am your average social media enjoyer, your average consumer. I'm not here for nuance and context. I'm here for the quick hit dopamine in 12 seconds.
Quality of information. My clickbait trap. Well, I have to have some clickbait for a little bit of engagement. It's either that or I can post 27 nonsense videos every single day. Ooh. And I refuse to do that because although I do post fluff, I will admit.
Yeah.
I have fluff, but fluff for me is like one of my goalies makes a really good save. Or
that's kind
my of my Sunday meme, which it's my Sunday memes I just think are so funny. I don't know why. I just think memes are one of the best vessels of comedy.
I think you're old.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And then
that is.
I like to show off my goalies and highlight them.
Yeah, that's fine.
And so that's my fluff versus nonsense. And everything else, I try to make sure there's substance. But
hold on. I'm not done with screens.
You're not done with screens.
So, yes. So this is something that I get a lot on screens, which is, you know, I teach. So tip for context, the way that I approach screens as a coach teaching goalies, I've spent a minute now since I've thought about how I approach screens as a goalie myself, which was probably just me quitting and giving up and getting scored on, realistically. I was like, oh, there's a person in front, it's over me. So I am my own worst enemy on this one. But as a coach, the way I look at it is I view screens as occurring in two different zones. So I view that there's a way to play screens down the middle of the ice. So between your circles, the screens where the puck is like between, you know, the middle of the ice, where, you know, you're essentially on the angle of the middle of the net, equal on both sides. And then I view like circles over as these like side screen areas where the net becomes a lot smaller relative to the shooter. And so I teach screens differently depending on what zone they're in. And what I mean by that is I am much more of the belief on those side angles that you should try and peek stick blade side relative to the player on the side angles. Whereas
like short side?
No, not necessarily short side. So let's say we're on like we're a standard goalie. You and I are standard goalies. Our blockers are on our right hand. We're on the blocker side of the ice.
Yeah.
And the shooter is left-handed. In that situation, I'm looking short side. One, because I think short side is a good default thing to look because of math. Puck is quicker to the short side than it is to the far side.
So we actually might disagree on something.
Hold on. I'm not done.
Okay.
I was going to say, in that situation, short side peak, because the stick blade is also. So that's like a two for two situation where I'd rather peek on the short side, especially because the stick blade side is there relative to the body. Now, when it's down the middle, I just like see, I'm just of the belief of just see the puck. Like it's, I don't think there is an approach necessarily, but probably why I'm wrong.
I don't think you're wrong. I think we might slightly differ in our, we have the same answer, but I think the way we get to that answer is slightly different. So I definitely call these guidelines, not hard and fast
rules.
Again, the only hard and fast rule I have is do what you can to see the puck.
Yes, stop the puck. But, that's actually my rule.
So when the puck is, let's say, directly in the middle of the ice, yep, or within a couple feet of the middle of the ice, that's when the net's the largest.
Sure.
So in a perfect world, meaning you have a singular screen and you can look on either side easily, I'm more of the mind that you look on what hand they are. So if it's a righty and you're
right side.
Yeah, if you're a normal-handed goalie, you're going to make that, you're going to look on your glove side. If the player's a lefty, you're going to look on your block side. Now, as that puck approaches the goal line on either side, my rule of thumb is if you have a, like, you should probably be looking on the short side regardless of hand position, because that's where the net is the largest. And so, because the net open, far side closes down when you go closer to the goal line, short side opens up. It's also quicker for that puck to get to the short side, like you said, than the far side. So regardless of hand position, and let's just say it, you have like some sort of line of sight where you don't have to be off angle or look to the other side, I would say look on the short side of the net. So for me, hand position only truly matters when that puck is in the middle and the net's the largest. When the net starts to get smaller and those angles change, look on the larger side of the net because you have a slightly more coverage. And that's, so that's my rationale for it. But if someone is a righty on the blocker hand side, that puck's probably going to be slightly more to the middle anyways. And so if you can't see it, then you have to look at that far side. But if that's, you should be also be able to look on the short side. It just depends. But that's, for me, hand position only really plays a role when the puck is in the middle.
Yeah,
so okay. We have similar answers, but just different ways to get there.
Yeah, it's different. And I think that's okay. I think we're allowed to disagree. This is crazy, but do you see how people can disagree without yelling at each other? This is wow.
We're doing. No, I'm gonna make like sick. I'm gonna cut all your things and my out of the podcast clip, and then make it so that I'm correct and you're wrong. And that's just it. And it's just like it's picking hairs because you're looking at maybe like a 3 to 4 foot difference.
Yeah.
And the relative distance for the goalie proportional to the stick is minimal. Mm-hmm. But like I always like, look, if you're coming across, there's a pass cross ice, mm-hmm, and you're T-pushing across and that player's catching it, like as you're moving, you should be able to identify like, okay, which side can I probably see this on to run the screen? If you can't, I'm always in mind of try to see on the short side first because that's where the net's going to be the largest. And if you can't, make that adjustment. On that note, one of my biggest pet peeves with coaching goalies is, with young kids, it's not a big deal because they're young and they're going to make mistakes. With my older goalies, I do want them to be a little bit smarter and be able to use some of that experience. So let's just say you have a screen in front of the puck.
Yes.
Now the goalies, and I think I've made posts about this before. So the goalies, you want to naturally get on angle, which you should. So you want to get on angle with your feet, but what they'll do, and if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see, and I'll try to describe it the best I can, is that player that's perfectly running, that puck's running perfectly through the player, so the player's doing a good job screening, is the goalies will get completely on angle, and so they'll be completely behind the player, and then they pause, and then they pick a side, versus coming across, getting their feet on angle, but having and looking to one side with their upper body. That way, they're really not losing that sight line. And that's something where I have like goalies that are mainly 14 and up, I'm like, okay, we need to, can't be making these mistakes. Like, you can't just be blind and then see it. Like you can get on angle with your feet and have your upper body leaning.
I agree. Yeah. So that's like something I was going to say is like a big thing too. It's also the same way with, let's say you're peeking short side, like we've talked about on the screen, and then the puck goes far side and goalies will just like give up trying to see the puck again. They're like, oh, it's going through a player, so it's gone now. Instead of actively trying to get their eyes around the player off the release. And again, look, it's hard. It's imperfect. You know what I mean? Unless you have a very, very, very clear release and it's not that hard of a shot. you know, it might not be a perfect situation for you. But yeah, the I see the puck. I found my sight line. Now the puck is going through the screen. I'm not even going to try anymore.
Yeah.
Hope it hits me when I shift into this.
Hope it is me. And that's why I do like a lot of projection stuff.
Yeah.
Because like, again, like a lot of goalies, and like where I force them, we're like, hey, like you can't just slide and get hit in the chest. You can slide and hit in the chest in the game. I just make the save.
Yeah.
But when we're in practice, I'm forcing you to have to use that hand so that you can see that release and pick it up on the other side of the screen without having to see that full sight line, because that happens way more than you think. And I'm of the belief that you really need, like, you can't hammer home enough screen work.
Yep.
At any age, because this players just get better and better at screening.
Yeah.
And it's hard when you watch NHL, especially when like the classic NHL fan, somebody who's like never played at a high level watches, and they're like, well, what do you get me? It's so hard to explain how good people are at screening in the like AHL and NHL. And even like between the East Coast, not that bad, to be fair. Like if you're going to be eating pucks, you're not eating pucks for $500 a month. Like, yeah, you're really you're not. But once you get to the AHL level where it's that there's a big difference and you're that close to NHL, like guys will go. And I think that was probably the biggest shock and surprise for me when I started playing at that level was like, one, I can't see anything.
No.
And two,
four people.
Everyone is getting their stick on every shot.
Yeah.
It is insane. I'm like, how is this even possible? And it's crazy. They're so good at it. But that's why it's like, okay, let's get those fundamentals. Let's really teach the basics to the kids and then give them different constraints. I start doing, especially when I love when I get shooters and they wear full gear. I'll start to do some flash screens, double screens, different things like that, that I don't have to use like a dummy, and I don't have to have like shoot as hard. And it just forces the goalies to be able to manage that. And it teaches them, and I can really start to get the point through. It's like, look, screens are still our responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You need to find that puck. I am not taking, I couldn't see it for an excuse, especially when I watch and you don't put an effort in. If you put an effort in and they can't see you, then I'm like, you couldn't see that release. I get that. Yeah. But when it's just like, I can't see it.
Well, I have a picture. I have two things, but I agree with you. I have a picture of one of my goalies. She got scored on, and there's seven people between the shooter and her. You can't, those goals, and you watch them again, and you watch the video back, and you have the perfect camera angle, and you like just can't see the goalie in any capacity whatsoever.
Yeah.
And the puck just goes in, and you're like, okay, if that can get through that many people and go in the net, okay, it's a goal. It's a good goal. Like, those are going to go in, right? Like, and I think that's something that's worth appreciating sometimes, right? Like, you can do everything right on that play. You can battle. You can do your best. You can go up, down, sideways, move over, give up your feet, butterfly, even try to look through legs like Vasilevskiy does sometimes. Like, everything, and you can still not see it. Like, the game is fast.
Yeah. No, and I agree. I'm not saying that, like, every screen goal is the goalie's responsibility, or it is. It's your responsibility to try to find it.
Yeah.
But could you look harder through that screen? I would say 90% of goalies probably could most of the time. And now that I've started to watch a lot more of my AAA goalies play, and I can see like other goalies from other programs, I can be like, ooh, I don't like that. Or, ooh, that's a good job. And then, like I said, my goalie gave up a screen goal where I don't think his effort was very good. And I told him.
Yeah. I have one more thing on screens, and then I want to do a quick thing on tips. I know we have other stuff I want to cover today. What do you think of goalies who underscore on screen plays? So let's go back to our example before. I'll explain this. We'll go back to that blocker side example. The shooter, let's say, is just outside the top of the circle. You have a screen in front.
Mm-hmm.
And a goalie will underscore, meaning that their blocker foot is in front of their glove foot relatively. And so that they're like, there's really no line to the short side, but they've opened up a little bit of line to the far side. And so they're doing it so that, yeah, I know, they're doing it that, so they're peeking on the far side, so they peek on their glove hand side. They've undersquared to the shooter so that if they need to,
I have to do it because to me, this doesn't make a lot of sense. I'm trying to like imagine that there's a screen in front of me. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see me like,
I was going to say, if you're listening to this, I particularly hope someone's listening to this in the car right now and they're just like, why is there an awkward silence? And it's Jamie trying to put himself in the position I'm describing, and it's not going well, quite frankly. But this is just something, again, it's kind of hard to conceptualize, I'll give you that, but it's something that I've seen a few NHL goalies do, and I don't know if it's intentional, but I do see people like teaching underscore saves sometimes, and I don't know how I feel about them. So I don't really think I have an opinion on them.
I would need to hear someone's rationale to that, because I don't see that. I can't put a distinct advantage over keeping the feet square and looking around with the upper body.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought maybe I'd throw this into your wheelhouse and see what you have to say, but alas, we're taking a pass on that. Okay, that's my last thing on screens. I want to do the quickest discussion on tips, and I've brought another hot take on tips.
Okay.
I think a good tip is either you get hit or it goes in. Like, I don't think you make a save on a good tip is like is my hot take. Like, I think you set yourself up to be hit on a tipped play. Now, again, let me add some context before you say it's like an offside of the net tip that you can slide into, like, yada, yada, yada. I'm talking person is in front of the net, shot is 2 feet off the ice, they get a stick blade off that aerial puck and it goes around you or it goes over you.
Yeah, so my only caveat on that would be, how far out is the tip?
Yep, and I knew you were going to say that, right? Because if you're sitting on your goal line and you allow that separation for the tip to get that upward trajectory, yes, that is a mistake. But I'll give you an example. We had an ice session yesterday, a two-shooter drill, and being, the U13 AA 60-goal scorer that I could be, I put a puck on net that was, like I said, about 2 feet. It was at the top of the crease, probably within 1 foot of where the person in front was. And my screen tip just got a blade on it and it went bar down. Like sharp angle change, like a 45-degree angle change from the trajectory of my shot. Mm. And I kind of went over to the goalie and I was like, you gapped that well. Like, you were close to the stick, but you weren't engaging with that person because you don't want to get tangled with that
figure.
And like, what are you going to do? You're not going to react to that.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to be able to react to that puck changing directions that violently, right?
Yeah, I think so. I would agree that most tips are just good positioning. I think, it's a high tip. Sometimes you can kind of pick that up and make that reaction depending. And sometimes
it's a timer.
Yeah. And there are some times where even if you are like, because I can distinctly remember times where like I have been so dialed in a game that maybe it felt like I reacted in a tip. Did I really? I don't know. But it's that prepositioning where you are in relation to tip. But one thing you can do is if someone sticks on the ice, like, you know that tip's probably going to, and like you can see that angle and you can make your judgment call, your read, depending on where that stick's positioned. If that stick's in the middle and that guy looks like he's going to tip down, like, you can adjust yourself appropriately. So I think playing those tips is more about, can you read that tip option stick blade prior to the shot? And I think that's something there that it's hard to teach. It's one of those more like exposure things, but that's also why, like, in my brain, I've played around with, and I've seen some of them for sale. I've played around with, like, can I just get like a screen board that also tips? But then I don't really like that because I'd prefer to have an actual shooter stick. And there are times where I stand in front and screen tip and it's so dangerous and I'm so worried I'm going to hit in the face. But in my mind, it's the best way to get something realistic. Now, I do have a hot take.
Your turn.
Now, I'm curious to know your thoughts on this. I feel like when I explain it, you're going to agree with me. But when there is a shot high,
yes,
and you have a tip and a screen,
yeah,
I want my goalies going down.
Yes.
Every time.
Yep. Every time.
Yep. And their hands making that save.
Not a hot take.
Not a hot take, but it is a hot take because I see this goal a lot.
The standing, like, I'm going to make the standing glove save. It's tip 5-4, then you butterfly. It's awkward in the net.
Yeah. Yeah. So my rationale for that, for those listening, is, so two things. If you're going down, your hands can still move to make
hands
that save.
Do not stop working. Yes.
So that original shot, as long as you track it well, you're going to catch that puck if it doesn't get tipped. if it does get tipped, it's going to be tipped probably low.
Mm-hmm.
And because it was tipped up, it's going to go over the net. Mm-hmm. If it's tipped down, that's our responsibility. And the third part of that is, if that puck's going over the net, it's a high stick. Mm-hmm. And yes, I understand that refs, and there is not video review at the U14 single A level. I know. But refs usually should catch that for the most part, hopefully. Yeah, but I would rather
they should.
I would rather it be high sticked down into your chest than be high sticked between your legs. Because for me, when that happens, I say that is your responsibility as a goalie to make that save. That one for me is like, it's not a good tip. Like, that's a misread.
Yeah, I'm like, again, I have a lot of thoughts on the stay up making saves mentality. I don't disagree that I know why people say it. I get the intent behind it, right?
Yeah.
You've heard me talk about this before, so let's not go down this rabbit hole, but we teach this standing up into saves mentality and trying to like fight between high and saying I'm going down to younger goalies because they're smaller and the net's big, right? Mm-hmm. And then they get big enough, and then do they still do that really? We do not treat older goalies staying up and going down the same way on the same shot as we do younger goalies because the net's different in size. And so that's a net size issue. And again, like, people are going to hate me by now when I keep talking about net size and properly according to the people playing it, right? But like, again, staying up on shots is great when it's a shot from 55 feet away. There's no one in front. If you want to stay up for that and it's like a slow enough shot that you feel comfortable making staying, go for it. Like, please do your thing, right? But those type of shots go away, like, the higher and higher level you play. How many professional saves did you make standing? Like, what percentage do you think? This is so unscientific. I'm sorry, it's science committee. Like, a tiny, tiny fraction of your saves are really standing up, glove save, standing up, blocker save in professionals?
Yeah. And the thing is, too, is, like, most of those were, like, shots on the blue that the guy was throwing it in. But I'm all for standing up on high shots. Like, I'm not against any. If you are just dialed and you track that all the way in and your lead is to stand up, 100% stand up. But the reality is, we know that the speed of the puck, the play surrounding us, the amount of net coverage we have, like, we're not always going to be dialed in on that read. So again, like, when people are like, oh, why didn't he just stand up on that Ovechkin one-timer? It's just like, oh, that's not how that works.
Yeah,
because
it's hard.
Yeah, no, I'm all for it. But in a tip situation, even when that puck is fluttered in,
Yeah.
For me, it's identifying that, okay, we have a tip option for it. It's a tip.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. I need to go down and seal the bottom of the ice, and I can allow my hands to make that save. And if it gets tipped down under my arm, like, that's still a tip, and we give ourselves a chance. There's no guarantee that if you stood up and that was tipped down, it's still probably going to go outside your pad as well. So that one, the ones to the leg, no. No bueno for me.
Yeah, it's no for me as well. Okay, that's a good stopping point. We'll take a break here, and when we come back on the other side, we're going to talk about communication between goalies and D and D and goalies.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
And we're back. Okay. Let's go right into it. Communication, Jamie. I think it's good.
I think it's one of those ones that seems obvious. Not enough goalies do it well at a young level. At the older level, if you're playing like junior A, probably you're probably doing okay. Maybe not. I have seen some goalies that are poor at it, but especially with younger goalies, minor hockey goalies, It's something that can, it kind of make or break a game. And this was a topic I wanted to talk about for a couple of weeks because I went and watched the game. And I remember Bouge told me once, he's like, if I can't hear you from the stands, your D can't hear you. Right. And that's the rule that I use for like all my goalies. I'm like, I want to be able to hear you. Like in practice, if I can't hear you yell, your D can't hear you, they're not going to be able to make that adjustment, because you can see what's going on up ice as that D's skating back with their back to the play. So you need to yell. And if you're not a loud kid, I don't care. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be loud at any other time except when you're yelling to your D. So we have that advantage where we can be in control. We can dictate that play, or at least give our defensemen and forwards some guideline about what's going on to make smarter plays. And that means you have to be loud. You have to be loud. Your parents, the fans, everyone should hear you. The second part on that is you have to go talk to your coaches and ask them what your set plays are, especially when it comes to playing the puck. I did a drill with high school team, and it is this February. I did a drill with my high school teams, and we do the drill, and I dump it in, and I go over. And they looked at me, and I was like, What are you doing? They're like, what do you mean over? I said up. They're like, what do you mean up? I was like, what do you mean? What do you mean up?
What do you mean?
Yeah, what do you mean? He's like, well, usually we just leave it. I'm like, okay, well, what do you know your set calls? And they go, no. I'm like, why not? They're like, well, no one's ever told us. It's like, it's your responsibility as the goalies to go to your coach, if you have a D coach, to ask your defenseman, like, what are my calls? Like, is it up? Is it over? Is it forehand? Is it backhand? Is it leave it? Is it set? You can't just expect your D to tell you what it is. It's your responsibility. You also need to know, like, do your D like to fan out? Okay, if your D are fanning out to the corner, you're going to have to start making plays. If you're not confident in that, you're going to have to start making that plays, and they're going to have to communicate with them. They're going to yell at you. You have to be able to make that call. So it's that is part of communication, is understanding systems and understanding the calls. But being confident and loud for me are like the biggest ones.
Yeah, I think so. This is something I've seen it. We probably see the same kind of levels between all the hockey we go watch. So I'll say junior level and down, because that's mainly what I spend my time watching. But even at the university level, it's not always, or college level, it's not always super great. I think for younger goalies, this is going to be a weird one, but one of the biggest limitations for a younger goalie is their mouth guard and being able to like audibly communicate. And I know that's, again, mouth guards are not the topic we're talking about. But if you're in a league that requires you to wear one and you're a goalie and you have to wear one, ensure that you have one that allows you to at least like audibly communicate things well. Right. And the nice thing is, you don't really, as a goalie to a defender, you don't really need many words to say. You need to basically say man on or some version of that. You need to be able to say quick up. You need to be able to say time. Those are kind of the common calls that are used by people. And if you don't know where to start with what calls you should be communicating to your D, those three are great, right? Yeah. Pick up, wheel is a good one too. It just means like going up the around, continuing the process. And normally it might be a combination of man on and wheel, right? Man on wheel, man on wheel, right?
Heads up, time, move man it, on, stream. On,
far side. Yeah, these really simple phrases that you need to be able to communicate. Because you need to be able to say a really quick word or couple words that immediately has meaning to a player without anything else, right? And so I always recommend for younger girls at a start, you start with things like time, man on, quick up.
Yeah.
Or, like those are pretty straight. Those are pretty straightforward. Most situations in younger hockey can be kind of covered by that. Conversely, like you said, it is 100% the responsibility of the goaltender to ensure the D are communicating with them. And what I mean by that is, anytime a goalie says, well, the D don't talk to me, I say, you need to go tell them to. You need to be the leader in communication for your defensive zone, right? Like, Jamie, put another marker on the whiteboard. I'm going to reference soccer again. So,
oh, my.
So episode 70.
Everybody that's taking a shot, take a shot.
No,
The bingo card, the shop bingo card. Ben says soccer.
Ben says soccer.
Jamie gets mad.
I didn't play soccer. Like, I played baseball growing up. I just, soccer has a lot of valuable research. One reason soccer position their players, right? They help set up their defensive structure, whether it's on set plays, whether it's on dynamic plays. Goalies, one of their main jobs is communicating to their team. There's a lot we can learn from goalies in soccer, from their training patterns, Jamie, but all the way to the communication that they use in their games and their practices and their training, right? You need to be the best communicator on your team as a goaltender, right? And that's not like the be the best skater you can be thing that we all learned as little kids with goalies. This is the fact that you have a unique position. You're the only player on the ice that's facing up ice the whole game as a goalie. You see the whole game in front of you, right? So you need to be that loud leader that helps communicate and orchestrate that. And if you're not doing that, then you can't expect your D to reciprocate. Right, because they're not hearing anything either, right? So if they're not hearing anything, they're not being reminded to communicate. And so, again, I've said this a lot the past couple of weeks, that a goalie is a component, like a mainstay of the defensive zone system. Your goalie is not just a goalie who, you know, your defensive zone structure is not five players or four players on a penalty kill. It's the goalie's a part of that, and communication is what continues that relationship between teams and their goalies.
Another part too that with that and the communication, especially when if you have identified something that the other team's doing on a face-off, like you can see set face-off plays, if you can see a dangerous one-timer and that guy and the guy or girl, the centerman taking the draw is either taking it directly the one-timer or they're taking it back with that pass across, you can like yell, be like, there's a one-timer option, or like check the high guy. All these different things are calls that you can use to help keep your defenseman, your center, on their toes, understanding the play and what's going on. And then I think the final part of this is you help keep your teammates safe. If they're going behind the net and they're looking at the puck and they don't know someone's going to come and just blow them up, if you say, just saying heads up, or man on, it gives them a sense, okay, something's coming. I need to protect myself and then make a safe play. Yeah. And that's really important because if you, and in my mind, if you miss those calls or you're a goalie that doesn't communicate and your defensemen are getting rocked in the corner, like you have a part, that part of that is onus is on you. Like you need to again, take that ownership, see that play, be able to read it. And this is why, you know, we harp so much on just like when you like watching a lot of hockey and watching it to see everything, to understand the play so that you know, okay, there's a center driving around the net. Or if there's a four, sorry, F1's driving around the net or F2's driving around the net, like he's probably going to take that body. And so you can pick that up and yell, you got two guys, you know, man on, or rim it, reverse. And it could allow to make safe plays for your defenseman, safe in terms of the play, and it's not causing danger in terms of a shot threat, and then safe as in keeping your teammates safe, healthy, and not injured. And so that's, I think that for me, that's like the final stake in why communication is so important.
Yeah, I think that's a really important part, right? You want to make your team feel safe. You want to make your players feel like they're not getting surprised, right? Because they have a lot going on. A lot of decisions they need to make. I think
they don't want to get hurt.
No, definitely not. And we don't want them to either. I think one other thing I will say too is if you are a goalie and you kind of don't know where to start with communication with your team, again, you could be any age here, right? Like sometimes there's just barriers to communication for whatever reason. I think keeping it really, really simple, right? So if you're a goalie and you're like, hey, I'm playing the puck behind the net on those hard dump-ins, I want to get them. I need my D and my forwards to understand that I need simple things. Is it leave it? Is it rim? Is it click up? Right? Or reverse, right? Like those are kind of, any of those things, you're pretty much good to go. Right. But like that needs to be like, you need to have those terms that you've established with your team, and they need to be repeatable and you need to understand them. Right. So I recommend probably those four: leave it, rim, reverse. Three. Am I missing anything there? Pick up, I guess. Make it a
pick up, over, up, set. I mean, some of them have the same meaning. They're just different ways of saying it.
I've never had anyone say set to me.
Oh, I had set. Leave it.
Yeah, see? I feel like a lot of guys are a leave it.
I think like a lot of guys are a leave it, but I've also heard
that makes, both. Set makes sense, too. It's simple, right? It's short. It's quick. Like I said, there's nothing worse than trying to have a whole big sentence being yelled at you. What are you talking about?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And I think that we talked about puck handling before and how puck handling can be scary for goalies sometimes, especially younger goalies, but can be scary for all goaltenders. Like, no one wants to make a bad play resulting in a goal. It feels terrible. Happens, though. Happens. Part of the
game. It does happen.
But again, having good communication will enable you to feel more confident, right? Knowing that you're not going in there without some support is really valuable. Like, for example, I know that girls, I know some girls are apprehensive to go play the puck because they're like, I go back there and I don't know what's coming. Right? And if someone tells you that, that means one, you're not scanning the ice well enough on those dump in plays. So that one, that's on you a little bit. You should know kind of how much time you have, at least an idea of it. But second of all, that means you need to have a conversation with your team. And again, we said D a lot, but this should be a full team communication standard, right? Like, we are big advocates, shockingly, at the Goalie Science Podcast for goalies being a fully inclusive member of the hockey team, right? Which means open communication channels with your forwards as well.
I agree. Ben, any other like final things you want to talk about? Any hot takes?
No, I already gave my hot takes today, and they're not even hot. I don't have hot takes.
I didn't really have any hot takes here. Nothing really fired me up this week, actually.
I have one hot take, actually.
Okay, there we go. I knew it.
It's one hot take, and it's not even a hot take. More so, just a commentary, a good piece of advice, I think, for goalies. It's a good piece of advice for coaches too. So I think this is actually just a hockey piece of advice. But let's start from the goalie perspective. Jamie, in your life, have you ever got scored on like a rebound off a breakaway?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah, happens, right? And anyways, let's just use that as the frame of reference. If you're a goalie who gets scored on a rebound on a breakaway, do not yell at your team.
We
we've been here before, but I want to reframe it, all right? And this is going to be the first example. Scoring chances are going to happen at both ends of the ice. It's hockey. Like, that's the game. Your team is going to have defensive breakdowns, and you're going to give up scoring chances. If a team gives up 35 scoring chances in a game, that can still happen. Your job is to deal with it, right? And I think attitudes can be better overall than, you know, like, why? What are you guys doing? Why is it, right?
Yeah.
It's going to happen, because think about it the other way. Think about it when you're the goalie and your team is doing that to the other team.
Yeah.
And you're like, we're dominating right now. That's respective.
Yeah.
Right? The reason I want to bring this up is I want to tie this into coach and player evaluations on goalies as well. If another team scores a goal on your goalie and you're mad at your goalie for that goal, think about how you would feel if your team scored that goal. If you're mad that a goalie gives up a far down 2-on-1, you're a shot. And you're like, oh, a goalie needs to have that. And then you go down and score that goal, and you're talking about what a play that was.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Perspective. So that's my hot take. I'm getting a little bit too much of the, and we talked about this before, get a little too much of like, what's our team doing? But sometimes teams' defensive structures are bad. I agree. Lots of teams have bad defensive structures.
A lot of them do.
If you're a goalie on a team with a bad defensive structure, you've played against teams that have bad defensive structures too.
Yes. I think that's a good take. I don't know how necessarily hot that is, but I think it's a good take. Yeah. I don't think I have any takes that can be better than that.
Yeah. It's been more so the coaching one, right? Like, I had a goalie give up a one timer off a power play, and they made a good read. They just got beat on the shot. You know what happens, right? Like, you make the right read, your eyes are good, your hands are good, and you puck goes in, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, gotta have that. And then we scored that same goal, and they were like, what a play.
Well, when we talk about rebounds, we'll save this for another episode, but it's just something to chew on. And I have it queued up on my to-do list in terms of content for Patreon goalies. Oh, take another shot. We said Patreon for Patreon goalies. And eventually the Instagram and YouTube and stuff. But just how much we talk about rebound control being like a symptom of tracking and positioning, but just how much the body mechanics of someone's stance and the execution of how they're moving into the save, how much that influences controlling rebounds. and I have a goalie who likes to sit upright.
Yeah.
There it is. And his rebounds are very bad. And so you've been working on it. And I went and watched him play yesterday. And the first few shots, he was upright, bad rebounds. All of a sudden, he just remembered all the things he'd been working on. He started to finally get his chest over his hips.
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden, his rebounds started going out of danger. And I've been using these as clips, as teaching points. I'm like, there is a big difference. So maybe next time we talk, we'll talk a little bit more about rebound controls and we get a little bit about biomechanics and stuff like that and physics. But
leaning back is a problem for rebound.
Leaning back is a problem. It's not just generally, it's just not very athletic, and that's not good.
No. So as always, everyone, if you are not a subscriber to the Jamie Bell's Patreon page,
why not?
I mean, the number one answer is probably just like cost. So if you're not a subscriber to the Jamie Bell's Patreon page, I'm not one. So you can be in the Ben Cernick non-subscribe club. But if you're someone who's looking for more content and you're someone who's looking to enjoy some really great work that Jamie does and who puts a lot of time into it, I say this as one, a very biased person, but two, someone who doesn't subscribe, you should. If you're looking for more content and you want consistent stuff, Jamie's Patreon page is the place to get it. If you want some of the free stuff, you can subscribe for free still, right?
Yeah, I don't think you don't get anything. If you want free stuff, go to YouTube.
Yeah, go to Jamie's YouTube, check out his Instagram page, places that you are probably already checking out. As always, links are in the show notes. But
Patreon is $10 a month. It's the cost of a skate sharpening.
Actually, I got my skate sharpened at 3/8. We did the skate sharpening. So I got my skate sharpened at 3/8. They squeak now when I stop. People laugh, but I feel great up there. $10.50.
So it's less.
Yeah.
Less than your skates being sharpened. Yep. You can get years and years of goalie breakdowns, content, lessons, drills, so many things.
For less than it costs to sharpen my skates.
Less than it costs to sharpen Ben's skates at a hilariously sharp degree, which he doesn't need it as a coach.
Well, it feels so good, though. I feel like you should see my crossovers. I'm making
fun of it. I got to get my skate sharpened today, actually. Like, I've been trying to demonstrate some edges, and I just can't get them.
There's nothing worse than going to demonstrate an edge and your skate slips out, and then you think back of all the times you told goalies, you got to be taller on your belly.
Well, for me, it's just like, oh, there goes my grind.
All right, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. We appreciate everyone who tunes in and sends us messages and reaches out to us. We appreciate all of you. And we hope you have a great week. Until next time.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.